New Hollywood is presented by the Apple TV Plus original series Defending Jacob, a gripping thriller based on the New York Times best-selling novel and starring Chris Evans, Michelle Dockery, Jaden Martell, Cherry Jones, Pablo Schreiber, Betty Gabriel, and Sakina Jaffrey. The limited series unfolds around a shocking crime that rocks a small Massachusetts town and one family in particular, forcing an assistant district attorney to choose between his sworn duty to uphold justice and his unconditional love for his son. For your Emmy consideration. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Deadline's New Hollywood Podcast. My name is Dino Ray Ramos.
And I'm Amanda Enduka. And publicly we have Dino for our quarantine.
This week, quarantine edition. I don't know what episode we're on. Quarantine edition. I don't know. It's whatever. This week we have Laura Harrier, star of the Netflix series Hollywood. And she's also been in Spider-Man Homecoming, also Black Klansman, but you're going to want to see her in Hollywood.
This is definitely her breakthrough. I mean, obviously, she's a lead. She's a series, or what is it? What is
lead.
It called?
She's a lead.
Yeah.
Main cast.
She's part of the main cast. It's her. It's a really, honestly, it's a really refreshing story about these young people trying to break in young people of color, people queer people trying to break through the industry back post-World War II. But it's sort of, like I said, what you would expect to happen back then, it sort of flips everything.
It subverts it. It flips it on its head, yeah.
Right,
and
right.
I would suggest going in with little knowledge as possible. So watch it first and then listen to this. Or do it reverse. Yes. I don't run your life. but there are minor spoilers in this, so just be aware. You know, watch the episode. Watch Hollywood anyway. Laura is fantastic. Yeah, we had a great time.
And it's definitely, the series is definitely in Ryan Murphy's DNA. Like, this is sort of what he does. He's a champion of diversity. He's a champion of representation. He always follows through with his words. And I just, like I said, I love how he sort of, like I said, takes things and shows people this different angle to it, and it keeps it interesting. It keeps it fun, and I don't know. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I stayed up. I was saying this. I stayed up till 3 a.m. watching it. I couldn't stop.
I'm just super excited for you guys to watch this show. Laura is a delight. You know,
she is.
We had a grand old time, and she shared stories. She shared tons of stories, but Hollywood is out already.
Mm-hmm.
We're recording this before, but it's already out.
Yeah. Right.
So, without further ado, here is Laura Harrier, Hollywood. Laura, thank you so much for joining us on the New Hollywood Podcast. This is our quarantine edition. We're getting a rhythm with our quarantine, our remote podcast, because usually we'll be in a studio and we'll kiki and we'll chat. But
Does it feel different?
Yeah. The first one was.
Yeah.
But now we're getting used to it.
Yeah, it's because you're not next to somebody, so you can't really play off of them as well. But yeah, this is definitely, we're definitely getting better. I mean,
it's hard to not talk over people as I'm talking over you right now.
Exactly.
I think it helps that we see each other. So it's like, if we're about to talk, it helps, but it still is like, you go first. Oh no, you go first.
And then there's always like that long, awkward silence. Cause like, I'm just like waiting for you to go first. And then it's
weird. But thank you for joining us. And you know, you're on a new show called Hollywood, which we'll get into
I just have to say, I watched that all. I binged that. I literally stayed up till 3 in the morning watching that.
Really?
Isn't it a show?
I could not stop.
It is.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah.
A show. Like, it is something. I'm just like, oh God. Like, the first one,
Ryan Murphy's gonna like give you a show. I feel like Murphy, like, you know, you're gonna have a show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, like, we just how are you doing right now? Are you doing okay during this lockdown? Are you getting a good relaxation in, or are you just starting to like trying to stay busy? Like, what have you been?
It's just such a weird time to talk about, I guess. I'm really grateful to, first of all, you know, be healthy, and my family and my loved ones are healthy, and that's a lot more than a lot of people can say. So, like, number one, that's the most important. I'm super grateful for that. Mm-hmm. And then this show is, it's such a strange time to have something coming out, because, you know, it's, I think it's important to talk about other things than the scary state of the world that we're in. But at the same time, it's like, how do we talk about, you know, TV when this is what's happening? But I do think it's really important for people to have like a form of escapism right now. And I think our show really does that well. I think it's really, you know, beautiful and aspirational, yet grounded in real events and heaviness in a way. But yeah, I think it'll be good for people to watch right now, because it definitely gave me a form of escapism. And I thought about, I forgot about what's going on right now for a little bit.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I've been busy talking about this, which is nice, because it's talking about it. Yeah.
So like we like to sort of touch on where people's journeys first start in this business, because everybody has an interesting story and an interesting way they got to where they are. So you started out in modeling, correct? And then you turned
into
Okay. So was that always the natural path for you? Was that what you had in mind? When did you first sort of know this is what you wanted to do?
I guess sort of, you know, a bit later than a lot of people. I wasn't the kid. I mean, I didn't grow up being like, I'm going to be an actor and I'm going to move to Hollywood. And, you know, I'm from outside of Chicago. My mom's a speech therapist. My dad worked in insurance. Like, it wasn't, you know, this, I wasn't like born into this at all. It didn't really feel like something that was possible, I guess. So I never sort of had this plan. But I was that kid always, like, I guess most kids are like this, like putting on plays and look at me and record with the VHS mom. And it was, you know, that was always a thing for sure. But then I moved to go to New York to go to NYU when I was 17. And I, when I was there, I was doing modeling like on the side. And then I decided to go to drama school because I had a lot of friends who were in film school at Tisch. And they would always ask me to be in, you know, their student films or whatever. And I was like, wait, I actually really love this. I think I'd like to focus on this a bit more. So modeling was more just kind of, you know, something I was fortunate enough to be able to do to pay the bills on the side, and not, you know, I did modeling instead of waiting tables, which is a blessing, but it definitely was not, it was not my goal or something I particularly enjoyed very much. I was very bored. I was really bored the whole time. So I'm really happy that this kind of happened, and I found, like, you know, my passion and my job.
And when you first started out, what like, how was it for you? What kind of obstacles or ups and downs did you face early on?
Well, I think I was really lucky to be working pretty soon into starting to act. When I was in drama school, Steve McQueen cast me in his pilot he was doing for HBO at the time, which was called Codes of Conduct. So that was really surreal and amazing. I mean, I was leaving my last year of drama school and like going to set with Steve McQueen and Helena Bonham Carter and Paul Dano and all these crazy people, and it was super intimidating and scary. So that was awesome. But then at the same time, you know, when that didn't go through, I felt really frustrated, because I think, you know, as a person of color in this industry, especially as a Black woman, the types of roles that were sent and types of auditions are very pigeonholed and typecasted and didn't feel fully rounded or like three-dimensional people. And so I definitely remember feeling very discouraged of getting, you know, kind of the same old stereotypical part that I didn't feel I connected to at all, and I didn't feel like was representational of us as Black women, really. And you know, so for a long time I didn't work because I just didn't want to do those things. And I'm so fortunate that then Spider-Man happened, and then after that Black Klansman, which felt like, you know, roles that I could really sink my teeth into and people that I wanted to portray and that I felt people would connect with. But there's definitely, you know, the lull and the scariness of, you know, maybe this isn't going to work.
Well, you know, and then now you're in Hollywood and well, Hollywood the show and Hollywood in general.
The thing you keep saying is like, the show is so meta.
It is though. But you know, when you first heard of the project, like, when Ryan Murphy announced it, like, they're like, they're doing this show called Hollywood. You know, how, and then, like, you read the script and you kind of went through this whole process. You know, when you first heard about it, how, and read through it, how did it meet and kind of go against your expectations of what you thought this show would be?
Well, the funny thing is, I didn't know anything about the show when I signed up to do it, to be totally honest.
Which is good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, somebody says Ryan Murphy is doing something, and I think most actors would be like, yes, done. Like, sign me up. Like, yeah. I don't really care what it is.
Yeah.
But it happened because, so about, I guess, a year ago, I got this audition sent to me, and it was just said untitled old Hollywood project or something like that. And it didn't even say Ryan Murphy, didn't give any details. There were dummy sides from a movie from the 40s that I went in, read the scene, kind of forgot about it, didn't hear anything. So just, you know, whatever, another audition that I went to that I didn't get. Mm-hmm. And then like 4 months later, I got a phone call saying, Ryan Murphy wants to meet you. You're going to do a chemistry read with Darren Criss. Come in tomorrow morning. I was like, I didn't know Ryan Murphy. Like, when did this happen? Like, I was so confused. I was really like, did someone make a mistake? Because I never read for him. This is a thing. And it turned out that audition way back when was actually for Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And so I went in the next morning. I did a scene with Darren, and Ryan was sitting silently in the corner looking major, being very intimidating. And I guess it went pretty well because, like, yeah, like 9 a.m. the next morning, I got a call saying that I was doing I got the role in Hollywood. So it was really amazing and exciting, but I didn't really, you know, it wasn't the normal process of you read a script and then you think about it for a while and see how you can connect with this character. It was really, for me, just like, I want to work with Ryan Murphy. And then finding out that it was something about old Hollywood and the opportunity to play an old Hollywood movie star was something that I've always dreamed of.
Yeah. What was how familiar were you with this particular era of film and TV and Hollywood in general?
I mean, it was definitely an era I was always drawn to. I think so many people are, you know, you think of the glamour and the beauty and the movies of that time. And, you know, I grew up watching Casablanca and Some Like It Hot and stuff with my mom. But at the same time, I never felt super connected to that era, to be honest, because I never saw myself in that, with the exception of Dorothy Dandridge, who I didn't really know about until later, like probably at least later in high school. And I loved it, but I never thought that I would see myself in this. So it was kind of like, oh my God, the idea of being like an old movie star and being glamorous and wearing the clothes and all that stuff was so cool. But before this project, I never thought that I would be able to play a character like Camille. So that was really amazing of Ryan to sort of have this revisionist history and to highlight the people who've been marginalized throughout this time and throughout film, be it, you know, people of color or women or people LGBTQ community. It really is important to like rewrite this history and to think about all the people who didn't get their shine and didn't get their due. And especially for me, that was Dorothy Dandridge, because in doing this, I really modeled a lot of Camille after her. And
I was going to ask you that. Yeah. I was definitely getting Dorothy vibes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah,
she was really sort of my inspiration for Camille, definitely. She was so beautiful and talented and intelligent, and her story is just so heartbreaking to me because she really like had such a tragic end to her life and to her career. And you know, I would like to think, had she been born another time, you know, she would have been the Halle Berry, or you know, she would have had this like incredible career and success, and due to the racism at the time, she wasn't able to have it. So for me, I kind of just wanted to pay homage to her, as well as, you know, Lena Horne, who was another one of the first Black movie stars. And think, you know, what if they had been, you know, given the support that they deserved, and what if people had said yes to them? What if, you know, if Dorothy had won the Oscar, then how would her life have turned out? So I hope that Camille sort of had a happier ending than she did.
I really like the fact that, like, he obviously took a traditional old Hollywood story and kind of put a spin on it. And I was just thinking when I was watching it, I was like, it's crazy that like that this is the way old Hollywood was, but we still see like, you know, remnants of it like today. It was just the fact that we're still sort of having this battle with like you know, our having our voice, our authentic voices be heard. It was just kind of crazy to me to think about all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, like Amanda said, when I watched the first like episode, I was all, oh, this is fun. You know, you kind of know what you're going, getting into when you go into a Ryan Murphy show, right? Like mm-hmm. it's fantastical. There's going to be kind of these storylines that are kind of like larger than life, right? But there was something very grounded about this, but fantastical at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I watched a couple episodes. Like the first one, I was like, okay, I know what they're doing. They're doing like a Scotty Bowers thing about, you know,
And then
it started to take a turn.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wait a second. I started to lean in more. I was all, ooh. And because the scene between Michelle Krusiak and Darren Criss, I was very happy with that, just because the fact that it covered so much about mm-hmm. how Anna May Wong was done so dirty by Hollywood, and how Darren Criss kind of was like, I'm half Filipino, and I was like, oh, whoa, I didn't, they never really... Like when his past roles in Versace, he was half Filipino, obviously, but this one is like just out there. Mm-hmm. And as soon as that happened, that's when I was like really like, okay. Mm-hmm. And then the queer storylines, and then Camille's story. There was just, I'm not just saying this because you're in the room. There was just something, because I've been like, as soon as I finished the series, I was just like, oh, okay, people are going to need to watch this.
Yeah, no, yeah. Definitely. What would you say, Laura, what would you say was it that when you first got introduced to Camille, what did you connect with off the bat? And what are some things that you learned about, that you learned from playing her?
I mean, I instantly connected with her. You know, I think had I been born 80 years earlier, my life might have been similar to hers. You're playing someone who has the same profession as you, first of all, obviously it's easy to connect, but for me it was really kind of feeling like, you know, an outsider in Hollywood and not really knowing your way in, but realizing that, you know, I really admired Camille because she realizes that this is about more than herself. It's not mm-hmm. just about, oh, I want to be an actress and win an Oscar and be in these big movies. She recognizes that this is about representation and this is about breaking barriers, and it's about all the, you know, the little Black girls that could be sitting in the movie theater looking up at her and realizing that they can be celebrated and intelligent and beautiful and all of these things that Black women had never been portrayed as on screen before. Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of what I wanted to keep in mind while playing her, that it wasn't just like a vanity thing. It was about, you know, breaking barriers and having that representation at the time. And then thinking about, like, you know, I was so lucky to grow up in a time when I could see women like Halle Berry and Angela Bassett or Jane Pinkett Smith, you know, like all these people on screen that I could connect with. And then what it would be like to not have that ever. And then to get this idea that, like, wait, maybe I could do that. Or, you know, mm-hmm. somebody needs to do it. Maybe it could be me. Mm-hmm. And that's so crazy and brave. And that's like what Lena Horne and Dorothy Dandridge did. So yeah. I was just inspired by them to I don't know, recognize that it's bigger than you. Yeah.
And I really love the scenes with her and Queen Latifah.
Yes. Well, spoiler alert for listeners. You know,
well, we don't have to give.
I kind of want to give everything away just because
it's hard to not talk about it.
Yeah,
we can talk about that, right? Because it's out there that.
I mean, she's in it.
We said spoiler alert. So yeah, if you're listening, you could fast forward.
But how was it playing opposite the queen, the original queen?
No, ladies first.
Right.
Right? I had zero chill. Just so excited. Like when I first found out she was going to be playing her, I had a little meltdown. I, not to be weird if you're listening, Queen Latifah, but I just loved her like forever, you know? I just grew up watching her and she was just the coolest and so like smart, and she wasn't like anybody. And I don't know, I just always admired her so much, and like outspoken and strong, and I love her. So mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. idea that I got to not only act with her in this show, but like that she would be playing Hattie McDaniel, this incredible yeah. figure from history, like who has not gotten her dues and like has not been portrayed well on screen, I think, you know, nobody yeah. really talks about her. She's been like this sort of erased from history in this way where she was super important. And it just made it really, it was that much easier to be able to listen to that story coming from Queen Latifah, you know, someone that I admire in the same way that Camille would have grown up admiring Hattie McDaniel. So it was really yeah. kind of this interesting parallel of our real personas and our characters, I think, in those scenes. So it made it really easy, honestly. I just had to listen to her and like, you know, try not to cry and then like hug her. Yeah. And not be
New Hollywood is presented by the Apple TV Plus original series Defending Jacob, a gripping thriller based on the New York Times best-selling novel and starring Chris Evans, Michelle Dockery, Jaden Martell, Cherry Jones, Pablo Schreiber, Betty Gabriel, and Sakina Jaffrey. The limited series unfolds around a shocking crime that rocks a small Massachusetts town and one family in particular, forcing an assistant district attorney to choose between his sworn duty to uphold justice and his unconditional love for his son, for your Emmy consideration.
It's just, like, I am, like, genuine. God, I sound so, like, fanboy, but I'm just, like, so genuinely excited for this show because... Yeah. And like what me and Amanda do here on New Hollywood, it's kind of, it just fits perfectly in what we're trying to do. And, you know, we've had, you know, Darren has been on our podcast before. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Janet Mock has been on our podcast before.
The love of my life.
Right?
She's just the best. She's the best person.
Yeah. And that now you, and then next week we're having Jeremy on, and you know, yay! So we're hitting all, but like as soon as I finished the last episode of Hollywood, and I just was like, oh, I'm gonna DM Janet Mock on Instagram to see if she responds, because I was like, oh, she's been on our podcast before, we're great,
gonna slide in.
and I just wrote this long ass DM saying, I feel seen. I was having a moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if quarantine's making me more emotional lately. Probably. But just,
it is for me. So.
Because yeah, and then like Amanda knows I'm a big crybaby, so I cried a lot throughout this, and then I was just like, I feel so seen. Yay! Yeah. And she responded, and she's, I'm so glad you like it. And oh, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, even what's his name? Jim Parsons' character, yeah. Brian Wilson.
Oh, oh my God. How
I
hilarious were, but unsettling is
I'm
he?
I'm conflicted like, with him. Like, I know, I'm
conflicted. Like you want to like him as Jim Parsons.
Right, exactly. I had a hard time accepting him like that.
Yeah.
But that's the thing about his character, because he does have, spoiler alert, a redemption at the very, very, very end. But yeah, at the same time, you see why he is the way he is. You know,
right.
He's jealous of Rock Hudson because he's, you know, or he's jealous of all these people he's around because he's never got to express himself like that so outwardly mm-hmm. before. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm conflicted with him, because I was like, oh, you're an asshole, but I kind of like you.
Right, right.
You're a sexual predator, but.
I weirdly, and then like that dance he did, I was
oh my
like,
God, how major is that scene?
But I have to. I was definitely rooting for him. I was hoping that he would have something redemption. Yeah, at the end.
But it's like just the whole show in general. There's just this thing. It's even with what I like about Ryan Murphy as well is that he gives, you know, quote unquote older women good roles.
Yeah.
And women in power finally win. You know, mm-hmm. Anna Mae Wong finally wins. Spoiler alert. But because and I just felt like shouting from the rooftops after it, and but no, but what I was getting at, that's my long way of leading to this question, you know, what did Hollywood the show teach you about underrepresentation, and how do you think this will contribute to this conversation that is so top of mind? You know, it's top of mind in Hollywood a lot, but it stays there and it kind of stays stagnant. And people will kind of touch on it a little bit, but then they'll be like, okay, there's a band-aid that will fix it for now.
It's like we take two steps forward and then like one step back.
Yeah. Or three steps forward and 10 steps back. Yeah. You know, some days. But like, what did it teach you, and what do you hope it kind of, how do you think it's going to move the narrative forward in terms of diversity and inclusion?
Well, you know, it taught me a lot about the people who were actually there that were underrepresented, the people who were marginalized. Like, these people were there. You know, Anna May Wong existed. There were Black actors that existed. There were people there were queer people. But history's been so whitewashed that we tend to think that Hollywood just was completely white and straight because that's the way that it's represented. It was really interesting for me to learn about, like, the George Cukor parties, which was, you know, these like fabulous gay parties that would happen thrown by this producer. And, you know, I didn't know who Anna May Wong was before because she's so underrepresented. And it was really interesting to just know that, and heartbreaking because to know that like all these people existed and how many people, for all those people whose names we don't know that were there and we don't know that had struggled and tried to make it and, you know, been shut down because of the marginalization at the time. But I think what's so cool about our show, I think, you know, Ryan calls it faction, where you take these real characters and
come through.
Right?
Faction.
Isn't that a good word? Right? Faction? Isn't it good? But taking, you know, real characters and real events and mixing them with fictional characters and fictional events, or you imagining a different end of the story for real people. And that's super inspiring because, you know, I just keep thinking, what if these changes had happened at the beginning of Hollywood? What would the world look like now? What would film look like now? And hopefully it inspires people to make those changes right now and to have more representation and to see more women in places of power and to see more queer people and people of color. Everything would just be so much better. Isn't that obvious? You know, it's just so much more interesting.
Yes.
And yeah. You know, I don't, it's just so much more interesting to have multiple points of view on the world. I hope that comes clear, and I hope that people keep rooting for that and wanting to see that. And, you know, it is frustrating because it feels like we do take these steps forward and take these steps back. But at the same time, I'm still inspired by people like Ryan Murphy who have been doing this since the beginning of his career, before it was like cool to have, you know, Black people on screen. Right. And, you know, he's been pushing for representation for a long time. And I just hope that more people follow suit.
Definitely.
I mean, I just love the way it got. I sound so like fanboy. I just love this show so much. But it's genuinely like I feel like Ryan Murphy made this show for our podcast.
Who's to say he didn't? I mean, ask him.
No, you're right. It's like you kind of see this trajectory of his career about, you know, starting with like Nip Tuck, and then like he always tackled these not weird, but interesting things, and then it elevated, it just kept, and then what he did with Pose and now with this, it's just like, okay, Ryan. I know, I think Hollywood would be so brown, Black, queer, and right now, but like Amanda said, it's so funny how we're watching this thing that was post-World War II, and we're still going through the same shit right now.
Right, yeah.
Like, I mean, it feels so relevant to right now. It's like the same discussions that we're having, and that's why I think it's important and people will connect with it at this time. But at the same time, it's just like, oh, why are we still talking about this?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I sound weird when I say this, but sometimes when we, like, when, you know, we talk about diversity, I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm repeating myself over and over again. Mm-hmm. But in a way, we have to, because if we don't talk about it, then who will?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly. And, you know, things come up every single day that need to be addressed. So the conversation is definitely important to continue on. But Laura, what's next for you after Hollywood? Yeah, what do you have coming up that you can talk about?
Can't talk about. You can break news with us if you want.
I have something I can't talk about, but who knows when things are going to happen?
Spider-Man 3.
Spider-Man Yeah, do you, can you say if you're gonna be in the
I don't know.
I know your movie dad in Far From Home. Homecoming.
Yeah.
He's gonna be. Is he gonna be in the Venom one? Anyways. Yeah, can I expect you?
Tell you guys.
Obviously not.
we don't want to get you in trouble.
I do not want to be filled with Marvel. That is okay. Not.
No, but anything. What else can you say? Like an album you're recording while in quarantine,
I don't know if I can say it.
If you're nervous, don't. We don't want to get you.
Yeah, I won't. Don't worry. But I will say that, you know, there's something I'm excited about that's coming up. But also, it's such a weird time because, like, everything's on hold. So, I don't actually know when we're all going to be back to work, weirdly. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what ends up happening. Hopefully, in a few months, we'll be able to go back to some sort of normalcy.
Yeah.
Like, everyone miss working and miss, you know, being creative and being on set. And so
being around humans.
I miss people. Remember hugging people?
I feel like we can't do that anymore at all.
I feel like hugs are like done.
Like they're gonna be like, no more hugs, no more handshakes, like none of that.
It's gonna be that's the thing. It's like it's gonna be interesting and how it's gonna be on the other side of this.
Yeah. But to be honest, would you guys feel like after everything, would you guys feel comfortable like still like hugging other people or like touching other people?
I trust, like,
okay.
Our previous podcast, I have a plan.
Like, when, plan.
You have your own plan.
When quarantine lifts, when they're like, okay, everyone could go, I'm gonna wait an extra 2 weeks to go out.
Okay. I mean, that's smart.
Yeah, and then build up.
And get sick.
Yeah, and then build up stamina, social stamina. Like, hang out with 5 people first. And
yeah, then that's true. 10. That's true. Yeah.
I don't know if I'm gonna get to like an arena full of people by the end of the year, and I hope we're not there because
gonna be for a while.
Yeah, honestly. And then when I saw people at Newport Beach and stuff this weekend, just like. I was just like a bitch.
I don't get it. Like, I don't understand. Like,
I drove past. I saw people at the beach.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Like, we've been going back and forth between like a house on the beach and my place here. Yeah, yeah. And it's like, there was packed. It was so crazy. And I went to go walk my dog with a mask and tried not to stand by people.
Yeah,
And people, nobody was social distancing. Everybody was just like hanging out without a mask on. This guy came up to me. He's like, oh my God, can I take a picture of my kids with your dog? And I'm like, sure. And he comes and stands right next to me.
Oh no!
And I was like trapped on the side of between like the wall and this man. Freaking out.
And you don't want to be crazy. you don't want to be like no, can you stand? Yeah, but like
maybe you need to be.
I should have honestly because I was so stressed after.
Yeah, no, I think everybody has to sort of let go of this whole.
Yeah,
rude not to shake hands or hug. Like it can't be. It can't be. Deemed as that anymore because now it's I actually have a good reason why I don't shake hands.
I don't
and it's like, we, I mean, like,
yeah, exactly.
Elbow bump, there'll be ways, just a good nod,
like, right? Yeah, nod.
Like an air high five.
Yeah,
nice,
exactly.
Nice to meet you. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I'm down with a bow, like let's just
or like a curtsy, just like,
a genuflect, you know. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you.
We'll find other ways. We'll find other ways. So we like to end this interview with this thing we call the FAQs or the facts. They're sort of just random questions, random fun questions. So the first one is, what is your go-to quarantine snack?
Cheese plate.
I've been eating a lot.
Also, yeah. I haven't eaten meat since I was a kid, and so now somehow I'm like eating like spicy salami and stuff. Like, I don't know who I am.
Oh, like a charcuterie. You're doing charcuterie.
I'm charcuterie. That's like my new thing, and I feel really weird about it.
I want to start.
And it just looks so pretty when you arrange it.
Yeah,
and it's like nice to make it look pretty and cute. It's kind of like a little creative thing, and then you eat it.
I'm gonna start doing that. I need to be more fancier in my life.
Okay, but I got... it's either that or Flaming Hot Munchies. So it's not.
Oh shit!
Munchies, I love the munchies.
Flaming Hot Munchies.
the ones with the pretzels, the sun chips, the Doritos, the Cheetos.
Yep.
That hit. There's like a CVS right around the corner from me. They offer it in the big bag or the snack bag.
Oh, I get the big bag. It's really dangerous.
Yeah, because I'm nervous for the big bag because I'll just sit there and eat the whole thing.
Yeah, I
can't. And then you feel like shit after.
Oh my god, I just remembered I have some downstairs in the cupboard.
Yes.
So, what film, TV, music, or pop culture icon would you love to play on screen?
Ooh, Josephine Baker.
Yeah.
Ooh, I could see that.
I can definitely.
Yeah, that would be my one. Sure.
A nice banana skirt.
Yeah, let's... get my banana skirt on, start dancing around.
Yes.
Let's live throw in it Paris. Out there. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we make things happen here, so it's going to happen.
Let's manifest it.
Yes. What was your first part-time job?
Babysitting? It's embarrassing. I never had a real job, honestly.
No, babysitting is a response. You are someone's life is in your hands.
I think I got fired because I wanted to go to a party in high school, though.
Oh, shit.
And then they never asked me to watch their kids.
Well, you know, it's fine. Amanda, what was your first part-time job?
I worked at Finish Line.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you had to touch people's feet?
No. I wouldn't, but some people would. I would just hand them a shoe. I don't know why. I'm pretty sure they can put their own shoe on.
I don't like that when you try. I could do it myself. Unless it's
What was yours, Dina?
I was a telemarketer.
Oh, no way. What were you selling?
I sold AT&T long distance services.
Oh, nice.
But when people used to make long distance.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
Everybody, I feel like everybody did some, a call center or something at one point.
Because they paid so much.
Yeah.
Well, at the time, I'm showing my age, it was $8 an hour. And we were all, oh, shit, $8 an hour?
Yeah.
So that was mine. Okay. That's so funny. Laura, would you rather sell all your possessions or sell one of your organs?
Which organ?
It's your dealer's choice.
I mean, I'm not really that materialistic. I like, it's nice to have nice things, but I also like my body. So
it's not like a pancreas, right? People don't need pancreas. Is it
you don't need your gallbladder.
One of those things. I don't know.
One of those things. A non-essential organ, okay, but I'm not trying to tell her
come through non-essential organs.
If you could be a member of any TV sitcom family, which one would it be?
I mean, God. I'd like to be on Living Single.
Oh, yes.
Right? Yeah. I loved Living Single. Shout out.
Who was your fave?
I mean, Queen Latifah.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, say,
who would you say you were most like?
Yeah.
I feel like, but then there was also Girlfriends. Like, I really related to Girlfriends.
Yes.
Girlfriends was really good. But then I love Fresh Prince,
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think I would want to be in the Fresh Prince family.
Yeah, they had a nice house.
They did.
In Bel Air.
I mean... Well, Living Single, I mean, I loved all of them, but I am definitely a Maxine stan.
I was going to say Maxine, too.
I like Regine just because she's fancy, and Sinclair was just kind of doofy and funny, and Khadijah was obviously the voice of reason, but Maxine was the shade thrower.
I was going to say, I love how sarcastic she was, and she was so witty.
Yeah,
that would be a good quarantine rewatch.
Yeah,
I think it's on Hulu, or is it?
Is it? I'm gonna get into that.
I think so, actually, because I think I just saw it. It's somewhere because I just watched it.
Okay.
But if not, it should
I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that you know what? I'm gonna petition to actually get. I'm trying to get MTV to put all of the Making the Bands on.
Wow, I have not thought about that.
Like all of them, like from the beginning?
All of
like
them, because I loved, like O-Town was okay, but I loved the band. I loved
the band, Danny
DeCane.
And then Danny DeCane. I loved those two seasons. I loved when Diddy made them to go walk to get cheesecake.
That's what I was about to say. In the middle of winter New York and walk to get cheesecake?
Yes.
I want them to do that.
Did you guys know, fun fact, random fact, Laverne Cox was... So Diddy had a show about people that wanted to be his assistant.
Assistant!
Yeah, Laverne Cox was on there.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, she was like...
Oh my God, I'm going to ask her about that.
That's it's so funny. Yeah, I was like, that's her. Yeah, but anyways.
Oh yeah, because it was like be Diddy's assistant or something.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
But like but yeah, what... So when you won, you just... That was it.
You became his assistant. But,
that's a surprise.
No, I think you actually became his assistant. I'm not really sure. I just remembered like they had to do a whole bunch of they had to do a whole bunch of odd jobs that you was probably. Never...
I have a lot of questions for Laverne.
Yeah.
What's his name? The Farnsworth guy.
Bentley.
But he was his umbrella holder.
Yeah.
He wasn't an assistant. He was just there.
Actually, I think he was Diddy's assistant, actually. And then he sort of like...
No, well, he needs multiple assistants.
Yeah, he sort of like broke out on his own because he like had like a personality and he had the umbrella thing.
Yeah.
That was his marker.
That was his thing.
He comments on my photos sometimes.
Oh, okay.
Should I ask him what he's doing?
Yeah, ask him what he's up to.
The umbrella guy?
Like, what have you been doing lately with your umbrella skills? And then our final question that we ask all our guests, is there an underrepresented voice in the industry, whether it's an actor, storyteller, writer, producer, filmmaker, or anyone who's not in the mainstream, or just someone who just deserves more shine and love that you want to give a shout out to? You could do multiple people too.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
I think what I'm really excited for people to see more of is Jeremy Pope, who's on our show.
Jeremy.
I
want a poster of him on my wall. Like he's so dreamy, you know.
He's very handsome. Yes.
He's so charming on the show.
Yeah.
I know, he's so charming. He's so talented, just insanely talented. And you know, he's obviously had this huge success in the theater, but I don't think, you know, this is kind of his on-screen breakout role, so he's going to be introduced to a whole new audience. So I'm just super excited for people to see him because he's insanely good and also a lovely person. We've become really good friends through this. It's been super fun. Ooh, on Friday we're going to do a little live thing and hang out and for our premiere. If you want to see it?
Oh yeah, I'm there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
I am very excited. I literally could not stop watching this show yesterday. It was.
It just increased every episode. It just got like, oh, ooh, what's next? You know.
And I loved. You know, we always sort of had this fantasy about living back at like, you know, in the 50s or the 40s, and like, oh, I would love to see how it would be in the 50s or the 40s Hollywood. But obviously, somebody like me wouldn't have the best time.
None of us would.
So it was nice to see, like I said, that whole like narrative being sort of flipped.
I could so talk about this show for hours and just like Patti LuPone being a boss bitch and like, oh God, I was so just major. Like and Holland and Taylor.
Holland Taylor, yes.
And even everyone is great. And, you know, congratulations so much, Laura. Yeah. I'm so excited for you for the show.
And we can't wait to see what you have coming up.
Yeah, this secret you, that you're keeping from us.
I'm so sorry.
But we'll see it on Deadline eventually.
Yeah.
But thank you so much, Laura.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's so fun talking to you guys.
Yeah.
Bye.